Good evening, group. My name is Chuck, and I am powerless over alcohol. And I want to start out by saying I thank you, Billy, for asking me. I'm not here tonight because I'm thinking about drinking. I'm here tonight because this program works. You know, I'm originally from North Carolina. I'm here as a part of a geographical change, which I'll get to later. You know, right out as far back as I can remember, I kind of felt like I got dealt a raw deal. You know, we grew up very poor, and like the family I had, there's a lot of embarrassment, a lot of shame when I was coming up as a kid. Didn't like school, you know. I was a kid with all the hand-me-downs going to school, and I really didn't like it. But for the most part, my childhood was pretty normal, you know. I got along with the other kids in the neighborhood, No video games back then. We played till the street lights came on, and, you know, that was that. Around age 13, I was still afraid of the dark. I think by this time, my father had been kind of sick all my life, and so had my mom. I was the last child. By this time I had nieces and nephews that were older than I was, so, you know, they weren't a big part of my life growing up when it came to school and things like that. You know, I was pretty good in sports. I remember my coach trying to get me to bring these letters home and you need to do this. You know, you could actually go to college on your football abilities. You know, that just didn't interest me at the time. So around age 13, then I'm still feeling out of place, still afraid of the dark. I can remember when my father was out and about and driving around. He hated taking me places with him at night because I would always make him leave the interior light on, you know, because I was afraid of the dark. Somewhere around 13, me and a couple of guys I was hanging out with, we went down by the creek and we had a couple of beers. Thinking back, I was just a freeze-dried alcoholic, man. I can remember after that first beer, man, thinking, you know, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. You know, I wasn't afraid of the dark anymore. I wasn't afraid of girls anymore. You know, and I proceeded to drink every chance I got. You know, somewhere around 14, 15 maybe, I knew by then I was full-blown alcoholic. Couldn't wait to get out of school, so I didn't. And I just proceeded to hang out. I lied about my age. I got a job at this place called Barclays Cafeteria in Charlotte, North Carolina. And mind you, I tell you how poor we was coming up. Not once did it dawn on me to, you know, take some of that money I was making home to help the family out. I proceeded to buy clothes and hang out with my buddies at the club. Now, I'm only about around 14 at this time. I was already going to state stores buying liquor. I was getting in all the clubs there in Charlotte, North Carolina, man, and I thought I had arrived. You know, I kind of sprung up. I wasn't that tall back then. I kind of sprung up around that time. And, you know, it was party central. You know, I was having a great time. I was about 6 feet tall. I had about 12 inches of afro, about 4 inches of platform shoes. Because all I was doing was buying clothes, man. And I thought I had arrived. You know, it was great. And this went on. You know, I was working this got a job with two of my buddies working at this parking facility in downtown Charlotte. And first started out parking cars. I ain't got no driver's license, no nothing. And they put me on this standalone lot by myself. And mind you, I was already a liar, thief, and a cheat. So I would collect the money and park the cars. And they had this carrier service that used to run between the banks downtown. You know, they didn't carry any cash or nothing, but what they would offer, what banks and some of the department stores downtown would offer, is these parking stamps. A parking was 60 cents an hour, and they would bring these parking stamps out. So I quickly learned, you know, being the smart guy that I was, that when these carrier guys came in, I wouldn't even issue them a ticket. You know, they'd just come back and give me a handful of parking stamps, and when any of the customers came out and paid in cash, I'd stick one of the parking stamps on it and I'd pocket the money. You know, and this provided a way for us to do what we needed to do every evening. So, you know, I wouldn't even have, didn't even have to spend my own paycheck. You know, I'd be there some evenings with, you know, anywhere from $20 to $25 every day, you know. That bought the booze back then. Pot is a big part of my story. But, you know, and we did this for years. You know, and I was just skating through life thinking I was untouchable. You know, and we got this idea one time. And one of the guys I was hanging out with, he's a few years older than me. And his parents had bought him a car. Well, that didn't last long. You know, we were running around, we were drinking and drugging. Finally, they took the car away from him. And we got this bright idea one day. The bank had a couple of cars that the executives would use during the day, and they would leave in the parking garage. And, you know, we would keep them washed, keep the oil changed and everything. And whoever needed it would come down to the parking garage and just get one. Well, I remember gassing one up and parking it. Had every intention of putting the keys where they belong, and just simply slipped my mind. And we're walking uptown to catch the bus home. And I stick my hand in my pocket. Man, I still got the keys to that car. Idea, you know. Needless to say, we went back, we got the car, and we rode around all night long. You know, got there early the next morning, parked the car, walked back uptown, got some breakfast, and then we come walking back down like we just got off the bus. You know, that worked out well. So we proceeded to do this. We probably did this for months. I mean, at least 3 months, you know.
Excuse us.
And you couldn't tell me that I wasn't smarter than the average bear. Because, you know, this was golden. They used to say one night we were cruising around. We're drinking and smoking pot. And we get pulled over. And the guy driving gave him this story about, oh, this is my cousin's car. Now, back then, they didn't, you know, they didn't have computers in the car. So they ended up letting us go. And I'm sitting in the back seat, and I just rolled up a joint, and we get pulled over again. This ain't 20 minutes later. And he gets the drive out. He's got him standing out there doing all this stuff, touching his nose, and guy's sitting in the front seat, he's looking, and there's a half a joint in the ashtray, and the cop's walking up the other side of the car, and I'm like, close the ashtray, close the ashtray. So, you know, he's trying to see what's going on outside, and the cop walks up, shines the flashlight in there, and saw the joint in the ashtray, and said, well, you might as well come on out, too. He said, come on out, you're under arrest, too. And he looked back there at me, and he said, you might as well come on, all y'all going to jail tonight, just come on out. And I had stuck this joint I just rolled down in my tennis shoes. I had a pair of high-top tennis shoes. This guy didn't pat my pockets, didn't pat my waistband. That man was right in my shoe. And I know he didn't see me. And he pulled that joint out there. So needless to say, we all went to jail. You know, This was on a Friday night. He said they found out we've been taking the car. Now, I'm thinking, you know, well, I know Isaac going in out here. I know my family ain't got no money. But that Monday morning, that Monday afternoon, it came in and said, Hatcher, one way. I'm like, what? Turns out my sister had come down to bail me out. And I didn't see her. I went right out the door. I went straight to my favorite spot, and I proceeded to get high and drink. You know, she didn't see me for 2 days. She come bail me out. She didn't see me for 2 days. So I ended up on probation out of this deal. Now I got to be home at 9 o'clock during the week. Now I'm clubbing now. You know, my public needs me. I got to be home at 9 o'clock during the week and 11 o'clock on the weekend. You know, things didn't start jumping till 11 o'clock. You know, and my family trying to talk to me. And I'm not liking the idea of coming home early. And, I got to tell this part of my story. You know, this guy really wasn't my cousin, just somebody I grew up with. Well, we were out in the street one day playing touch football. And this girl come around the corner in the car and it quit on him. Well, this guy, Eli, he was somewhat a mechanic, and he got the girl's car started. They started talking, and before you know it, they were married. And they lived there in Charlotte, North Carolina. And this guy, if I had to put money on it, I'd say he was an alcoholic because, you know, we all hung out together. But this guy was working two jobs. He was working at a place called Bravoni Hosiery, a textile company, and during the daytime, and he was driving a cab all night. And what their plans were, he was going to pay for her to go to college. And when she got her degree, she was going to pay for him to go. A good plan, you know. But at any rate, I don't know what went on in the marriage, but apparently it wasn't that good. Remember one day, at the school said that, you know, Eli was in the hospital, and what had happened is she boiled a 4-quart pot of water and poured it on this guy while he was sleeping. He was so tired from working all this time, she thought he was out cheating. At any rate, she did this to him. He ended up in the hospital, pronounced dead twice. And, you know, finally he pulled through this. She had burned over 95% of his body. So, what she did was, she came up to D.C., joined the Coast Guard under a maiden name, and he found out where she was. You know, I mean, this guy was in love. And, he moved up here with her, and, you know, things were getting pretty bad for me back in Charlotte, and he came home for a visit. You know, by this time, I was unemployed. You know, the money was gone, the good times were gone, you know, and I'm sick of hearing this crap at home about what I need to do to straighten up. And, you know, he came down for a visit, and he said, well, why don't you come back up to D.C. with me? Good idea, you know. And I left Charlotte with the clothes on my back. I think I was right, somewhere between 15 and 16 years old. Came up here. Never forget it, the first night we came up here. We got in the house. He told her I was going to be staying there for a while. And he was going to take me out and show me around. Now, she was also an alcoholic. I didn't know it then, but she was a blackout drinker. And we walked out of the apartment, went down in the parking lot and got in the car. And by the time we were, lived on the third floor, by the time we were pulling out of the parking lot, you see all of his clothes coming over the balcony. You know, and so he's going to go macho now. And he jumps out the car and he says, woman, I tell you what, when I get back here, my clothes better be in that closet. And if there's any dirt on them, they better be clean. And we roll on out, you know. We come back late on that night, probably around 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. And his shoes were still in the parking lot. People had run over them. And I should have known something was wrong then. But anyway. You know, and they would fight like cats and dogs, man. And I'm going, you know, like I said, I didn't know what a black eye was. I got his job. He had an automobile sitting there not doing nothing. By this time, I had gotten my driver's license and got this job at Barclays Cafeteria in Marlow Heights, Maryland. You know, I proceeded to work there. And I remember I was off on Sundays and Mondays. And I'm sitting there one Monday afternoon watching TV. And she come through the door. Apparently, I had been drinking in a blackout. She had peed on herself. She had a hammer in one hand and a piece of galvanized pipe about this long. I'm going, she walked in. She said, "Where's Eli?" I'm going, "I don't know. I guess he's at work." And she went on back to the room. She changed clothes. She come back out like nothing had never happened. This time, I don't know what a blackout is. I'm like, man. I came home one day. Locks had been changed. You know, and I got tired of this. In the meantime, I had met this married woman at the cafeteria where I was working. She was 15 years my senior, you know, and we had started dating. And she goes, "Well, why don't you get your own place?" You know. So I got my own place, and this is when things really kind of start spiraling out. I don't know how I kept that job. I don't think at this point I was drinking every day. And from the time I started drinking, I knew people would talk about how much I drank. So when I would go places, say for instance, if I went to a club, I'd buy one of those $1.50 beers, and I would have a half a pint stuck down in my sock. Now, I'm the kind of drink I drink straight out of the bottle. Didn't matter if it was one of them little minis or a half gallon. I drink straight out the bottle. Don't give me no glass. Don't give me no ice. And, you know, I kind of worked that cafeteria thing for a few years. And then some other jobs. I mean, you know, getting kind of hard to hold on to a job by then. So at any rate, I end up in 1978 getting a job at Fairfax County Water. And I say, well, I got to straighten up. Say anything about quitting drinking. You know, I got to straighten up a little bit. And it baffles me to the day that I didn't lose that job. I was certainly on the verge of losing it. Anyway, things just kept going downhill. Somehow, I managed to buy a house with this woman. Like I said, I held on to that job somehow. And things just got progressively worse with the drinking. I can remember one day, you know, I'm trying to slow down. I'd been on this job for a few years now. And back then, you know, everybody kind of drank on a construction site. With Fairfax County Water, we worked in new construction. They were building houses left and right. And I worked on a crew that we went out and installed water services at these new construction sites. And I kept that job for about 11 years. And I can remember going to work. Now, I'm drinking in the morning by now. You know, and if you're an alcoholic, Maryland is an alcoholic's heaven. They had drive-through windows. You didn't even have to stagger out the car. And they opened up at 6 o'clock in the morning. You know, and I can remember a man being in that parking lot, waiting on that drive-through window to open it, at about 5:45 in the morning, cussing this guy out. Now, you know, state law says they can't sell before 6 o'clock. And I'm going, he see me sitting out there. Why he can't open up that window? He knew I got to go to work, you know. And I did this for years, man. I worked 48 miles from where I lived. many morning. I drove all the way to work, got to the gate, and said, you know, I'd overshot it. And turned around and go back home, man, and couldn't wait to get back to Maryland to get another drink. I kept a bottle under my seat, you know, even during the summertime. I remember having half a pint of vodka under my seat one day getting off. It was, phew, gosh, it must have been 90 degrees. And I gave that cap about a half turn. That thing shut off there like to put my eye out. I'm like, Jesus Christ. But I drank it anyway, you know. By this time, I can remember one day at work, you know, I didn't work a lot of overtime back then, you know. Remember one day at work, I got stuck working overtime. And I can remember being, it was a water main break, I can remember being down the hole, it was about 7 o'clock, about 6:30, 7 o'clock in the evening, I'm way past my drinking time. And I can remember getting ready to come up out of the hole. There was a ladder down in the hole. And the next thing I know, the paramedics were there. You know, what happened is I had a seizure, you know, because I had went a few hours past my drinking time. So when I woke up, paramedics were there. I refused help. I bit through my tongue, blood running out of the corner of my mouth and everything. And we were wrapping up, and I'm like, man, just let me get away. Just let me get to the liquor store before 9 o'clock. And I made it. And then I kind of found out what was causing these seizures, you know. And then, now I'm scared to drive. You know, I'm working 48 miles from home, and it was quite a while before I had another seizure because I would. Alcohol became like gasoline. The car can't move without it, you know. And at the time, I was sick thinking, I thought I was doing the right thing. You know, I don't want to have a seizure and kill somebody out here, you know. So it was about 2 years before I had another seizure. And I had this seizure around 1:30 in the afternoon, you know. And I thought to myself, wow. You know, I didn't drink enough this morning. I won't let that happen again. You know, never dawned on me to quit. And, you know, I just looked for different ways to cover it up. You know, and I'll give you an example of some of my insane thinking. I heard one time if you chew a piece of brown paper bag, that they couldn't smell it on your breath. You know, I drink a half a pint of vodka in the morning, chew up half a Safeway bag. They would still smell the stuff on my breath. And I didn't know back then that it was actually coming out of my pores, you know. Somebody said, well, stick a penny under your tongue. They can't smell it. You know, I drink a half a pint of vodka. I go to work with about 30 cents in my mouth. And they would still smell it, you know. By this time, man, I mean, it's just getting around two or three times a week that I can't make it to work, you know. I try to get just right, and I'd overshoot it. And remember my boss calling me in the office one day. He said, Chuck, you know, I like to drink just like the next man. He said, you think you can hold off to the weekends? I'm like, yeah, I can do that. And I believe to this day, if you'd hooked me up to the lie detector test, I would have passed it. But needless to say, I didn't make it home. And it just was getting worse and worse. And he told me one day, he said, look, he said, you got leave and it's yours to use. Now, I'm running out of leave quick. He said, if it gets to the point I have to give you leave without pay, he said, then I can do something about it. And I'm down to about 17 hours. Down to about 17 hours of leave. And, you know, I'm saying, well, you know, I got to show up for work every day. You know, I'd burned all my leave. And by this time, I was having to bring a doctor's excuse in anytime I was off work. And I had this doctor for $10. I could get one. And, I'll never forget it. It was freezing rain that morning. Streets were covered with ice. I remember stopping to get gas. And to this day, I honestly can't tell you if I paid for that gas or not. I remember getting back in the car. And the next thing I remember, you know, I was coming to from a blackout. And it's on this two-lane road, doing about 60 miles an hour. And I didn't know where I was. So I kind of finally got myself together and kind of started recognizing where I was. I was 9 miles out of the way. Like I said, I don't know if I paid for that gas. There was three major intersections. I can't tell you if the lights were red, green, yellow, whatever, when I went through them. And I'm knowing right now that work probably not going to happen today. And got this bright idea, you know, I'm going to call that doctor, and I'm going to tell her I need some help. And it's coming up on this intersection. I don't know if I drifted into that blackout again, but like I said, it was icy that morning. I don't know if I drifted back into a blackout, but I was going too fast to take the corner, so I tried to take it anyway, and I ended up sideswiping somebody. And I pulled over because it's the right thing to do. And instantly I thought to myself, well, if the cops show up, you're going to jail. So I pulled off. And I went home. I had a little better than half a pint under my seat. And I called this doctor up, and I told her that I needed help. And she said, well, don't stop drinking till I can find you a bed. She knew about the seizures and all by now. And she called me back about 45 minutes later and said, go over to Prince George's Hospital. So I drove myself to Prince George's Hospital. And I went inside, and I'm swearing off drinking the whole way over there. Mind you, I got a little over half a pint in the car. And they say, well, we'll see if we can find you a bed. And, you know, I'm sitting there. I'm scared to death. By this time, I know I can't quit drinking. I'm afraid to quit drinking. And I really didn't think I had no choice. I thought for me it was either drink or die from a seizure. And I didn't want to die from a seizure, you know. So they finally came out and told me that they had a bed for me. And I can remember feeling okay then. I'm going to go out here and finish this half a pint. And I went down to the parking garage and I finished that half a pint. Had forgot what I swore off just that quick. Well, needless to say, I stayed in the detox for 5 days. Third day in there, I had a seizure. You know, and I think that Saturday, I got out. Had a bottle full of Dilantin and a when and where. And I went to a meeting that Sunday, and it was a speaker's meeting, and this guy pretty much told my story. Now I'm thinking, okay, these people over at the hospital then called these people and told them what to say. You know, because this guy drank just like me, right down to the seizures over 9 yards. And somehow I remember getting a little hope out of that meeting. And, you know, and I talked to him after the meeting. He said, you know, if you don't pick up a drink again, I thought I was going to be on that delay. He said, no. You stop drinking. You're not going to have to take that stuff. And I never finished that bottle. This was my first time through in 1989. And I don't know what date that was. And I've heard since I've been back here this time that if you don't remember your sobriety date, then you probably don't have it yet. And I know it was sometime in September. And started going to meetings. Life got better. I went to meetings faithfully for about 5 years. And this whole time, I kept it about the drinking. You know, I never took a look at what made Chuck tick. I heard enough in these rooms to get me by. And for the next 16 years, I did not drink. And to remember September of 2004, you know, life is good. I own a house in Sterling. I own a couple of rental properties in Dumfries, you know, and I got 3 years left to retire. And the wife and I, who I met in the program, she had been sober for 15 years. And we decided to go on a cruise. Now, mind you, neither one of us are going to meetings. You know, I'm still lying. I'm still stealing. This time I'm sober, so I was taking advantage of all the overtime that the Water Authority had to offer. And I mean, we would go out 9 o'clock at night, be finished with that job by 11, but we wouldn't get off to 7 a.m. And I mean, we did this for years. I mean, just, God, I'm to the tune of thousands of dollars. I think my base salary was, back then, was $38,000. I was turning $65,000, $70,000 at the end of the year. And a lot of this overtime, but we didn't work. You know, I made a lot of that overtime just sleeping in the truck. You know, very dishonest. Still not drinking. And the wife and I decided to go on this cruise in September 2004. Now, this time I got 3 years left to retire. And we went on a cruise. Nothing wrong. You know, financially stable, job stable, nothing's wrong. We went on this cruise. Probably the first couple of nights on that cruise, you know, there's champagne in the room. We not thinking about that. And somewhere on that cruise, we both somehow decided to take a drink. And I think we both knew it was wrong. Like I say, neither one of us was going to meetings at this time. And, you know, we come up with this thing, look, what happened on the ship, stay on the ship. You know, I call it the day Dumb and Dumber, you know. Now, this is September of 2004, and still not drinking on a regular basis, you know. And I'm going to tell you, the worst thing for an alcoholic is to pick up a drink and nothing go wrong. Because, boy, with those wheels start turning, we get bold. And, you know, I'm still trying to maintain going to work, you know. I can't really get back in this drinking. I'm too close to retirement now. Well, I was up at personnel one day, and I was joking with these people. This was October 15th. 2004. And I told the girl, I said, look, punch up my number, see when I can retire. Because y'all getting on my nerves, you know. And she actually pulled my file up, and she kind of chuckled. She said, you know what? She said, if you use your sick leave as years of service, you can go now. Now, this is the guy getting ready to get fired because he didn't have any leave on the books. I had 3 years worth of sick leave on the books as a result of not being sober, but just not drinking. And that was October 15th. October 31st, I retired. And the drinking kind of took off. And shortly after that, I sold the house. We sold the house we had in Culpeper. House sold in 11 hours. Started building a house here in Culpeper. And had a construction loan in place for that. You know, close to $200,000 in the bank that we owned outright. We didn't know anybody for this money. And the drinking and the pot smoking kind of took off, you know. Took 2 years to build this house, you know, and by the end of that, dude, it was it was all downhill. You know, we were spending money recklessly. You know, about a year and a half into this construction, man, money was gone. You know, if it wasn't for that loan being in place, probably wouldn't have completed the house. But, you know, I had gone from about 230 pounds down to 146. And I was dying. You know, financially we in bad shape now, you know. I'm back to the point that I'm worried about seizures now, because I'm back to drinking in the morning, back to every day. You know, can't attend any business, can't take care of business. I every intention of getting up in the morning, not drinking, and going to take care of what, but it never happened. And I checked back into detox. Stayed in detox for a week. Now, my wife's never been a big drinker, you know, but she liked to smoke the pot. And her thing was, well, if you get sober, we'll be all right. You know, she was still working at the time. I was unemployed. I retired, and I had no intentions of going back to work. You know, I was getting a pension check every, you know, the first of every month. So I checked back into detox, and I came to one or two meetings in Culpeper that didn't work. You know, I can't even tell you how long I stayed sober. It may have been a week or so. I went back to drinking. And this lasted a few months. And I checked back into detox. And came back around here. You know, went to a couple of meetings. Next thing you know, I'm drinking again. And this whole time I'm not working, you know. And I just couldn't take it anymore. I was dying. Clothes were falling off. And didn't check back into detox this time. August 2nd, I decided I wasn't going to drink anymore. And I laid on the couch for 2 days, shaking, puking, sweating. And on August 5th, I walked back into these rooms, scared to get a cup of coffee. And I asked you people for help. And I can remember my wife saying, well, if you just go back, we'll be all right. And I said, well, you know, you sit there smoking pot, you know, the first thing they're going to tell me, get rid of you. So reluctantly, she came back. She came back to support me. And by the grace of God, she heard what she needed to hear. Today, both our anniversaries is August 5th, 2007. And I have a sponsor today who has a sponsor. And I sponsor people today. I've learned more in these 3 years that I've been back than I ever did that first 16 years. I can remember coming back and talking to a guy that situation was similar to mine. He was 15 years and went back out. You know, things were going good. When we decided to pick that drink up, there was nothing wrong. Life was good, you know. We made a decision to take the drink. You know, he said, my sponsor told me why I went back out there. And I say, what was that? You know, maybe it pertains to me too. And he said, a sponsor told me you can't hang pride on a miracle. You know, with all the stuff that I accumulated, not drinking and drugging, you know, there again, I've started taking credit for it. Look what Chuck has done. Today, life is good. Financially, situations could be better, you know, but they're okay. You know, I'm grateful today for what I have. Man, I can remember getting back in here and talking this stuff over with my sponsor. I met my sponsor at Boxwood. He was up there bringing a meeting in for H&I. And I heard what he said, and after that meeting, I asked him to be my sponsor. I would tell him about my situation, and he would just look at me and say, "How long do you want to suffer?" You know, give me some financial advice or something. I don't want to hear this, man. And he would just say, "How long do you want to suffer?" No matter what I told him, he'd say, "The answer's in the steps." And I can tell you, man, about 4 months back in this program, I didn't see no way out of my situation. My heart was skipping a beat every time I saw that ABC sign. I got to tell you this. I was so happy when they put that other liquor store in Culpeper. I didn't have to go in the same store every day. See, I knew people would talk. And walked into the liquor store one day, and I saw Sam in there. Yeah, this new face, I'm going to get in his line because he don't know what the deal is. You know, I'll go over here to Sam. He don't see me every day, you know. But, it's just amazing. And I came to this meeting for the first time after I got back in. Sam was one of the first people I saw. I was like, wow. And I told Sam then, I say, "Man, hopefully this is the only place you'll see me from now on." You know, but at any rate, I started working my sponsor, and I started working these steps. And as soon as I started working these steps honestly and to the best of my ability, man, things kind of started to clear up. You know, I drive down the road one day, and I passed that ABC store. My heart didn't skip a beat. You know, finally got a job. You know, I got this job working with this company called McLean and Company, and they were out of town all the time. And I remember being down in North Carolina. And mind you, I was sitting around meetings telling everybody, "Oh, I need a job." I finally get one. Beautiful day. We down in Eatonton, North Carolina. And we're inspecting a bridge over the Albemarle Sound, and striper season had just opened. I'm in a brand new unit, AC working good, radio working good, and all I had to do was every 10, 15 minutes they'd come over the intercom and say, "Could you pull up about 5 feet?" And I'm mad because I'm not at home, you know. And I can remember sitting there getting mad, being mad. And I thought about it. You know what? Chuck, you need to be grateful that you got the job. You know, because it certainly could be a beautiful day. They were catching stripers, all these boats out on the water. And about 5 minutes later, my phone rang. And this guy from AmeriGas here in Culpeper, and he said, "I got a full-time position open. Do you want it?" As soon as I got grateful. You know, I can remember sitting in the hotel, may have been the evening before that, and or the evening after that. You know, I hear something splashing around in the pool, and there's this homeless guy. He's kind of bathing in the pool, got his socks off, you know, and they floating around in the pool. And, you know, I'm going over to the phone. I'm going to call down the front desk. Don't they see this fool out there? And something wouldn't let me touch that phone. And, you know, but for the grace of God, they'll go out. You know, I'm one drink away from being that guy in the pool. And it's been a beautiful ride since then, man. I got with a sponsor. We've started working the steps. And life started getting better, you know. And I had all these ideas with what would put my life back on track. I'm going to tell you something. You can't see the blessings coming. You know, by this time, the wife had been laid off. And I really don't know how we're going to make it. You know, I can remember one morning lacing my boots up thinking, you know, why am I doing this? This ain't enough money to get things turned around. Why am I doing this? You know, And I remember one thing my sponsor said, just suit up and show up. You know, when I look back, the lights were always on. There was food on the table. You know, things just work out, you know. And I was at a meeting a couple of Fridays ago, and a guy threw out a topic, and I can remember sitting there and, where is he going with this, you know? And because it was mainly about drugs. And I'm like, where is he going with this, you know? And he talked about, you know, God doing for him what he couldn't do for himself back then in that situation. Now, since I've been back, I've been kind of looking back as far as back as the day I came back in here, noticing the thing that God had done for me since then. But, you know, that kind of made me think. For the first time I looked back to when I was out there, you know, drinking and drugging, man, there's a lot of footprints in the sand, and, you know, they're not my size. You know, I can remember, I've been one to always work. I remember at one point I was working, driving a school bus for Arlington County, during the day, and I was working at Red Lobster on Pickett Road in Alexandria in the evenings. Like I said, I don't know if it's a problem. I managed to stay sober long enough to work, and this particular Friday night, I didn't want to be there. And I don't know how I come up with an excuse, even what the excuse was, you know. But I got off about 2 hours early. You know, I just didn't want to be there. Imagine me not wanting to work on a Friday night. But, and I was on my way to work at Arlington County the next morning. I heard on the radio that someone had robbed a Red Lobster and three employees were shot. It was the guy that took my place when I left, the night manager and the cashier. And footprints in the sand, man. I mean, that I would have been there. You know, just multiple situations like that. I totaled all three cars, you know, to get here I stand. You know, all that drinking and driving, you know, and I've never had a DUI. You know, it's just amazing that, you know, and this takes going to meetings. You know, I'm 3 years in, and, you know, and I'm still learning, you know. And that gave me a whole new sense of gratitude. You know, my sponsor said, if you're not grateful, you're not sober. You know, because it could always been worse, you know. And, you know, I say to myself, thank God I got what I got. And I didn't get what I deserved. You know, I'm running out of time quick here, you know. But, again, I want to thank Billy for asking me to come. And, you know, I kind of going, well, why is he asking me? Because I've been coming to this meeting since I've been coming back. And, you know, Billy gets these dynamite speakers, you know. You know, I guess he sees something that I don't know about yet. But anyway, I want to thank you again, Billy. This was definitely great. And I want to leave you with this little joke that Billy told me to keep it clean, but keep it as clean as possible. You know, they say in AA, we know there's a God. And in religion, they believe there's a God. Well, there was this preacher had farm, and he sold hay, you know, when he wasn't preaching enough. He got this recovering alcoholic to help him haul hay. You know, they did it with the horse and the wagon. And they're going down the road, and one wheel fell off the wagon. The recovering alcoholic said, damn. He said, don't say that. Say, Lord, help me. They fixed the wheel, and they go on down the road. Next day, they come around there. Two wheels fall off the wagon. The recovering alcoholic said, damn. But he said, no, don't say that. Say, Lord, help me. Next day, they would come down, and all four wheels fell off the wagon. The recovering alcoholic said, Lord, help me. Wheels jumped back on the wagon. The preacher said, damn.